This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Since the Russian invasion of Ukraine began on the 24th of February this year, allegations have been made that Russian soldiers sexually assaulted women. Rape and sexual assaults are war crimes and a breach of international humanitarian law, but despite UN resolutions, international legal duties, voluntary pledges and so on, the use of these crimes persist. So on the show today, I'm joined by Dr. Johanna Higgs. She's a women's rights activist, she's an anthropologist, and founder of the women's rights advocacy group Project Monma, to discuss how rape and sexual violence are used as a weapon of war, with a special focus on the Ukraine conflict. Welcome, Johanna. How are you today?
Hi there. I'm great. Thank you so much for having me again.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me, Johanna. So, you know, we've had you on the show a couple of times. You know, you've told us about Project Monma. I'm sorry to make you repeat yourself, but for those who are not familiar with the work that you do, maybe you can just describe what Project Monma is all about.
Sure. So Project Monma is a small organization that aims to generate awareness about different forms of violence and discrimination against women and girls around the world. So I've done short-term research projects in places such as Argentina, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Lebanon, in Mauritania, in Mozambique, on all kinds of issues relating to human trafficking, slavery, domestic violence, sexual harassment, honor killings, you know, all the different types of forms of violence and discrimination that women and girls face. And the goal is to generate awareness, but through generating that awareness to sort of hopefully motivate people to take action in their own lives, their own communities, and in their own countries, to try to push for a more gender equal, less violent world for all women and girls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, basically you advocate for women's rights around the world, isn't it? And you've traveled extensively. I mean, we caught up last in August to talk about the ongoing situation in Afghanistan. You've gone to Africa, so many places, isn't it?
Yes, and that's what's really drew me to this is the fact that this problem of violence and discrimination against women and girls is global. There's not a corner of the earth where it's not happening, which is strange. You know, it doesn't seem to matter how different people are in terms of their cultures, their religious beliefs, etc. This phenomenon of treating women as if they have less worth than men and justifying violence, especially sexual violence against women and girls, seems to be everywhere.
Yeah, it doesn't discriminate, you know, it's not a particular age, it's not a particular race, it's you know, just women in general, or just anyone who's, in a situation where they can't defend themselves properly.
Yes, exactly. But it's still, I mean, it's, I think, you know, you could even in some of the most gender equal countries in the world, you know, in Scandinavia, et cetera, that there's still not equality when it comes to representation in politics, in CEOs, women, you know, having equal amounts of women in high positions in businesses and organizations as men. So,
There's a much bigger problem there. But we do want to talk about Ukraine today. You know, we've been seeing so many reports of it. And so I was just doing some reading, and Relief Web, which is the humanitarian information service provided by the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or OCHA. So reports of sexual violence have been made by civilians who have managed to flee Ukraine, you know, by survivors who were recently liberated from particular areas. We've seen reports on social media. There was even, you know, news coming out from the Ukrainian security services who intercepted conversations between Russian soldiers and relatives or friends in Russia where they bragged about incidents of rape. I mean, it's really horrifying to read about it. And we know it's happening all over the world. But, you know, what are some cases that you've heard from Ukraine that you can share with us?
Yes, well, unfortunately, I've been hearing the same as you. Actually, when the Ukrainian conflict started, this was something that I knew, having sort of worked in different kinds of conflict areas, I knew this was something that was coming, because when you look at any conflict around the world, rape, sexual violence in its most grotesque forms are always, always prevalent, primarily against women and girls, but there are also cases where men and boys are targeted as well. Mm-hmm. So I've also heard stories of women being hiding in basements Russian soldiers have come in and dragged women off and raped them, in some cases raped them repeatedly. What I'm hearing is cases of Russian soldiers coming into homes, killing the husband or killing the males who are in the house, and then taking the women and raping the women. Very disturbingly, I heard a intercepted video, sorry, phone call between a Russian woman with her husband, who was a Russian soldier in Ukraine, giving him permission to rape Ukrainian women. She said, just use protection. This was her statement. There's been cases reported by Human Rights Watch, independent human rights bodies, that are saying that, you know, that rape is being systematically used and is widespread. There was another case where there were a group of women hiding in a basement where supposedly 25 women were gang raped. 9 of them are now pregnant.
Oh, my goodness.
It's absolutely barbaric. And I read another story where a 16-year-old girl was raped in the street, and witnesses reported hearing them shouting, calling them Nazi prostitutes, and this is what's going to happen to all the Nazi prostitutes.
Mm. Okay, so just horrifying things that you're hearing, and I guess, you know, what do you think? You know, would you say these are sort of indications that civilians are being targeted as part of the war strategy?
Absolutely. Rape is commonly known as being a weapon of war. Mm-hmm. It's a way of, I think for anybody listening, for anybody in the world, this is something, rape is something nobody wants that to happen to them. Nobody wants it to happen to somebody they know. They don't want it to happen to their children. They don't want it to happen to their mothers, their fathers, anybody. And it's a form of torture. It's a form of not only torturing somebody, but it's a way of just destroying family networks. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what I'm also hearing is cases of mothers being raped in front of their children. And, you know, can you imagine what that does to a small child to see, you know, you're 5 years old and these men burst into your house and rape your mother in front of you, what kind of destruction that's going to lead to in the long term. And so I think that this is, you know, this is what they're, it's incredible, because when you listen to what the nuts, you know, what the propaganda is in Russia and how they're defending this, it's about, you know, they're saying, well, we're defending the Ukrainians from Nazis, we're liberating them, we're freeing them from oppression.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, it's just ways of torturing civilians, isn't it? It's very clear, you know, the evidence that sexual violence is a distinct element in torturing them, civilians.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It is absolutely. And I think that it's also a form of, I think that what is also happening is the Russian soldiers are taking advantage of the lawlessness. Mm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're coming in and they're the situation where they're in charge. There's nobody holding them to account for their behavior. And they're in part acting on some kind of instinct, I imagine. There's been very little research, I think, understanding this. What is actually going on inside of these male soldiers' minds when they enter into a village of a country that they've invaded and they decide to gang rape a 16-year-old girl? Mm-hmm. What is motivating them to do that? Do they not feel empathy? Do they not feel sympathy? Do they not feel that they're doing something wrong? Or is it just that it's purely pleasure for them to do this?
It's really weird. I mean, I was reading again that article from Relief Web, and one thing they said was that, you know, some armed groups, I'm not sure if this is the case in Ukraine, but, you know, in previous times have used sexual violence as an informal mechanism to strengthen commitment between the fighters, actually.
Right. Yeah, like it's a form of male bonding between the fighters.
That's right, yeah. And so, you know, they reportedly use sexual violence as a form of socialization and social control within the group to sort of strengthen loyalty and cohesion. And, you know, we've been hearing reports, you know, since the start of the Russian invasion that, you know, some of the Russian soldiers have been deserting posts, having poor morale and all of that. And I don't know, you know, in some warped sense, you know, maybe this is some way that they are, you know, using this tool to stay together. I don't know. It's you know, wrong and bad on all fronts. I don't know what to say about this.
I know, because it goes beyond words, doesn't it? It's so horrifying. It's so terrible. It's so shocking that it becomes hard to find words that are adequate to describe it. And I think there's also such a feeling of helplessness.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we can, I think if we, well, I would hope that we can all imagine what, how terrified that must be if you're a 16-year-old girl and a group of men come and drag you from your home into the street and gang rape you in front of the whole, your entire community, that this, the absolute horror of that is unspeakable in a way, which is probably precisely why it's being done, because of that horror. But I think it's also, it's outrageous when there's support for it, you know, when there are people who are supporting the Russian occupation of Ukraine, because obviously supporting the Russian occupation of Ukraine involves supporting these kinds of behaviors, aside from the mass murder that's taking place, the indiscriminate killing of well, maybe it's not indiscriminate, but the targeted killing of civilians,
yeah.
And then the purposeful rape of women and children. Actually, another case that I read yesterday was some children were found. I think it was also in a basement with their hands tied behind their backs and with their genitals mutilated. Children. And so,
yeah. And it's happening, right? And of course, it's also, I mean, you know, I think, you know, for every report that we do get this, you know, how many, 10 to 20 cases that are not reported, right? In conflict zones, that's, I think, some of the estimates that the UN has.
Yes. And I think this is the case also in civilian times. You know, this is going to be the case for whoever's listening to this now, wherever you're living, there's for sure some women and girls, or men and boys too, who have been sexually assaulted in some form and are have not told anybody. And I think that in most cases has to do with the shame that's associated with sexual violence. It has to do with the blame that usually gets put on victims of sexual violence. It gets the long and harrowing and very difficult processes that victims have to go through when they go to police stations, when they, you know, if they do want to pursue charges. In the case of Ukraine, I think that's a little bit difficult just at the moment. But it's such an unforgiving world when it comes to victims of sexual violence. And obviously, whatever happens in civilian times transfers into war times. And so if there's been, in a particular society, wherever it is in the world, where rape is severely stigmatized, or the victims of rape are severely stigmatized, it's not going to be better during a conflict time. So for certain, there's plenty of victims of rape or sexual some form of sexual violence right now in Ukraine who are absolutely not coming forward with what has happened to them for those reasons.
Okay, just going to go for a quick break, Johanna. When we come back, let's talk about sort of the laws that are in place to, supposedly, you know, get, I guess, justice for the survivors of these crimes. I'm speaking today to Dr. Johanna Higgs. She's a women's rights activist. She's an anthropologist and founder of Project Monma. We're talking about how rape and sexual violence is being used as a weapon in the Ukraine conflict. We'll keep that discussion going after this quick break. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me today is Dr. Johanna Higgs. She's a women's rights activist. She's an anthropologist and founder of women's rights advocacy group Project Monma. And we're discussing how sexual violence and rape are used as weapons of war. We're focusing specifically on the Ukraine conflict for this conversation, but, you know, it is a global problem. And Johanna, you know, we mentioned this, right, that you know, it is a war crime, and, you know, that all parties to armed conflict in Ukraine are obligated to abide by international humanitarian law or the laws of war, and that includes things like the Geneva Conventions of 1949, so many other things. I mean, talk to me a little bit about that. You know, what sort of laws are in place? What sort of protection or what sort of recourse to justice will these survivors have, hopefully, once this conflict is over?
Yes, well, I mean, so rape is considered a war crime. Mm-hmm. Even after the Second World War concluded and during the Nuremberg trials and the Tokyo trials, even at that time, rape was not considered a crime during war, and there were no prosecutions of anybody for rape during this time, which is shocking in itself. And actually, just to answer your question, but I just wanted to read this, that since that time, since the Second World War and after the Nuremberg trials, the UN estimates that during the Rwandan conflict, there were between 100 and 250,000 women who were raped during that three-month genocide in 1994. They estimate that more than 60,000 women were raped during the war in Sierra Leone, more than 40,000 in Liberia, and up to 60,000 during the conflict in former Yugoslavia. And it is estimated that at least 200,000 women in the Democratic Republic of Congo have been raped since 1998. Oh, so just to, and again, going back to our former point of what is probably of underreporting, that those numbers are probably much higher. And the UN also estimates that in conflict zones, for every one rape, it is estimated that between 10 and 20 are not reported. Okay, so it was only in 1992, after the conflict in Yugoslavia came to end, that sexual violence was first considered as a serious crime by the UN Security Council. Despite that, rape has continued within conflicts, the various conflicts around the world. However, the statute on the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia has included rape as a crime against humanity, and in 2001 was the first international court to find an accused person guilty of rape as a crime against humanity. That wasn't until 2001.
That's crazy.
In 1994, the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, after the genocide there, also declared rape to be a war crime and a crime against humanity. The Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court in 2002 put into place laws that include rape, sexual slavery, enforced prostitution, forced pregnancy, enforced sterilization, or any other form of sexual violence of comparable gravity as being a crime against humanity when it is committed in a widespread or systematic way. Okay. So these are some of the current international laws that we have on sexual violence during conflicts.
Yeah.
So, carry on.
No, I was just going to say that I think, you know, I was also reading in that, you know, it took so long because, you know, these sorts of sexual violence and conflict was just sort of like tacitly accepted, right, as unavoidable until, you know, as you mentioned, 1992, when it finally caught the attention of the UN Security Council, right?
Yes, exactly. And isn't that shocking?
Yeah. Gosh, and for centuries, right? Because, I mean, we've been having wars for as long as we can remember. So it's just always been something that's been accepted. It's crazy.
It is crazy because it is the horror that can be, that is caused by rape and sexual violence there are few words that can, as we've already said, that can describe that. The United Nations has called rape torture. So how is it possible that this cannot be taken seriously as a serious crime? So what we can hope for here with Ukraine is that now, with greater emphasis being placed on sexual violence around the world, well, in certain parts of the world, and also with the greater ability to document war crimes, and people can document on their phones and things like that you know that they have, and there'll be a greater chance that those who are perpetrating these crimes in Ukraine right now will be punished and held to account when this hopefully when this comes to an end.
Yeah, and I think we're also reading that, you know, those who even managed to escape Ukraine, you know, those who are refugees, even in countries like wherever that they were accepted, right, even they are still subject to these sorts of, you know, fears and the threats of sexual violence. You know, there's rapes happening, there are, like, you know, there also could be victims of trafficking and things like that. Am I correct?
Yes, absolutely. Human trafficking is that, because when you have a lawless environment, when there's no law and order there to keep things under control, then people can basically do whatever they want.
Yeah.
And in these kind of environments, there's going to be no protection for whoever is going to be targeted for trafficking. So yes, absolutely. Human trafficking takes place anyways when there's in peaceful countries where there's no conflict at all, this is still something that is prevalent. So in lawless environments with no sort of proper law and order in place, or when they've been severely broken down, it makes it much easier for these kinds of people to carry out, to kidnap people and to sell them. Yeah. Yes.
And of course, you know, the fear is that, you know, the trauma caused by all of this, you know, the use of rape as a military tactic and all of that is going to lead to very deep suffering across Ukrainian society for years to come. I mean, just focusing on Ukraine, right? From your own experiences, and you've worked with survivors, am I correct? How have you helped them through this trauma? I mean, what can we actually do?
So I think that yes, of course. Like I think again, any of us can imagine should that something like that happen to ourselves, or should it happen to somebody that we know or we love or we care about, we can sort of imagine how that might make us feel. And of course, for anyone who's suffered this kind of or been subject to this kind of horror, it will have a long lasting effect on them, most likely for the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly why it is just so important that we as a global community condemn this behavior, that we have no tolerance for it. We do not support anyone who takes part in it, and we certainly don't support governments who are initiating this, such as is the case with Putin. Mm-hmm. And I think that one of the most, unfortunately, it's too late for some people now in Ukraine, as the rapes have already taken place. Yeah. And so what we can do now, and what we can do now as a global community, is push for punishments, insist that that more efforts be made in whatever ways are possible to get a ceasefire to this conflict, to bring it to an end, so that no more people have to suffer the horror of sexual violence, but also to really insist that that our governments push the Security Council or push the United Nations to ensure that not only are all these war crimes documented, but that those responsible are severely punished in accordance with these laws of these rules of war that we have, and that we recognize that rape is not only a war crime, but it is morally reprehensible. It is not something that we, you know, I think any of us, regardless of how different we are in our cultures, our belief systems, our religious beliefs, whatever it is, I think this is something that is morally reprehensible for all of us.
For sure. And you know, as we said before, you know, the impacts of these are going to persist. You know, there are things like unwanted pregnancies, sexually transmitted infections, stigmatization, of course. And I think it was the executive director of UN Women, Sima Bahous, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. She has come out to say that gender-sensitive and survivor-centered response must be at the heart of, you know, all sorts of humanitarian action to deal with that. I'm sure you agree with that as well.
Yes, absolutely. And also within that is recognizing, you know, the male victims that are targeted for this as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess, I mean, what would you, as somebody who's worked with, you know, survivors who have, you know, who has seen this, you know, with your own eyes, what would you like people to know ultimately, and how would you like them to respond? Because like you said, you know, we feel so powerless sitting here, you know, what can we possibly do? But what are some, you know, steps that we can take besides what you just mentioned earlier?
I think one of the biggest steps that we can take is to ensure that in our own homes, in our own communities, in our own societies, in our churches or mosques or synagogues or wherever it is that we go to pray, that we try to insist that sexual violence of any forms, whether it's from sexual harassment to rape, is condemned, that it becomes part of our our moral fabric of our society, that we don't accept this. And when a certain action or a certain belief system or of some kind becomes so criticized, when it becomes so condemned within a particular society or group, people are afraid to do it because they're scared of the stigmatization, they're scared of the criticism that they will receive from others. And then those things translate into conflict times. So I think that perhaps if we make sure that at all times rape and sexual violence is something that is at no times permitted ever. It's not permitted in peaceful times, it's not permitted during conflict. then this is something that we can do that will, you know, should something happen in our countries, should our countries go to war, we can hope that the soldiers who are participating in that are have that in their mind, that rape is something that they absolutely should not do. It's not allowed during war. It's not allowed during at any time. Mm-hmm. And also, when it comes to the end of the conflict, when rape and sexual violence is taken really seriously as an issue, there is more likely for the justice mechanisms to be implemented. It's more likely there's going to be a heavy push to punish the perpetrators of these crimes because it is such a strong issue and it is taken seriously in peaceful times and in conflict times as a crime. I think that's something that we can really do, and it's not something that we can do to protect victims of sexual violence or potential victims of sexual violence during conflict, but it's something we can do to protect potential victims of sexual violence in peacetime as well.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much, Johanna, for joining me today. Before I let you go, anything else you want to add?
I think it's just I would encourage like anyone listening to if you have 5 minutes of your day or 10 minutes of your day, just to go online, and there's a lot being documented. There are YouTube videos, there's news articles that are detailing some of these things that are happening in not just in Ukraine but in other parts of the world as well. And just to give yourself a little bit more of a if you don't already know, but to understand a little bit more about why this is such an important issue and why it is so important for all of us to stand against it. I think that would be great.
Definitely. And, you know, if folks would like to find out more about Project Monmar, you do have a website, right? Projectmonmar.co?
That's right.
And are you on social media as well, Johanna?
Yes, I am. I am. I do have a Facebook page for Project Monmar.
Project Monmar. Okay, so we can head to projectmonmar.co. So that's Project MONMA.co, or find you guys over on Facebook. Thank you so much, Johanna, for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
I've been speaking to Dr. Johanna Higgs. She's a women's rights activist. She's an anthropologist and founder of the women's rights advocacy group Project Monmar. We were talking about how rape and sexual violence is used as a weapon in conflict. If you miss any part of our conversation, you can always search for the podcast at bfm.my/learn, or you can find it on the BFM app. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.